Welcome, Legionaries, to episode 42 of LegionCast. I am your host, Warwick, and joining me as usual is my co-host, Brandon.
Welcome, Legion brothers, Legion sisters, and often forgotten, but never by me, those who forgot to come up with a joke for this intro. Welcome to LegionCast. Great to be back, everybody, and looking forward to this chat.
Glad to have you. Glad you're here. And joining us as usual is my brother, Maniple.
Greetings, Longbeards. Good to be here again. My grudge this week is against moving heavy things like treadmills.
And joining us, as always, is our valued friend and co-host, Paul.
Back for another one. Should be a good one.
So, a little bit of a hobby update for me, a very small one. I have built my 15-man terror squad for my Night Lords. They are armed with the nastiest Chainglaive STL that I could find. They look like straight out of an Strahman Nightmare, and I gave them all chain cannons because I'm going to mow you down with weight of fire, even though they're of low strength. But with that terror assault and pinning and shell shock, I am going to be stacking all the debuffs on you when I hit you with just that hail of incoming fire. Brandon, what have you been doing?
It's funny you should mention chain cannons because, boys, it's been almost 2 years coming, but we're doing it.
Ooh, Iron Warriors.
Iron Warriors, baby. It's time to grasp the iron within.
Right on. I am
building some stuff up for my Emperor's Children. I want to get everything for them built while I'm also launching this Iron Warriors project. I had an idea to do a list based on our next book, actually, doing some Angel Exterminatus style stuff, except maybe without as gross and weird of Emperor's Children. But as we speak, I am in my Cheeto Box slicer putting together a plate so that I can build some Iron Warriors Dominators, because I am a dirty, dirty power gamer, and I'm so excited to get them on the table. But it's time. I'm excited. Let's do this.
Now, Maniple, you have been absolutely neck deep in hobby space renovations. How are those going?
Well, you guys can see behind me in the video my closet, which is out in the middle of a room. And I've discovered I've got when it's all in one place, I've got a lot more books than I thought I had and board games. But what I'm trying to get my mind around is my ultimate game room. You know, what's this actually going to look like? And so I'm trying to go through and sort out all my hobby materials, because I'm trying to decide if I want to have my hobby area in the same room I play games in. Does that kind of make sense to you guys, or would you think of those as different spaces?
I think that I would enjoy it because all my stuff is in the same place. I'm not carrying my boxes of models from one room to another.
I'm at a stage in my life where it's storage, hobby room, kitchen, bedroom, bathroom, all in one. So I kind of have just learn to live with everything all together.
Yeah, so now I'm going to go through and sort out all my hobby tools, because I've got two or three sets of almost everything. I really got to downsize some of that stuff, because I just want to have one hobby space, not be spread out in a few different areas. And this will be the year of consolidation and probably downsizing, but only keeping the good stuff.
Paul, what have you been working on?
Yeah, I finally pulled the trigger on jet bikes. So it's time to retire the dreadnoughts. A actual regular Sons of Horus list is now on the way. So, the days of two Leviathans and four Contemptors on the table is going the way of the dinosaur now.
I'm going to tell you straight up, I love that jet bike kit. It is a lot of fun to work on.
Yeah, I've been really impressed with it so far. So, working on those.
Right on. Should we get into our hobby news update and what GW has been teasing us with? Paul, do you maybe want to lead on that and tell us about your new model?
Yeah. So, rejoice. We've got another Sons of Horus model. You know, it's been a very long time since we got the last one. I'm sure you're all ecstatic about it. But we have Tybalt Mar. I mean, the model looks really good. I'm pretty impressed with it. It looks like he's going to be getting a complete overhaul in terms of rules. The Culling Blade is completely different than what they had in the Legacies PDF. And he's got a unique Warlord trait now. Because before he had, blanking on the name of it, but he had the comeback on a 2-up generic Sons of Horus trait before. Yeah, looks like a complete overhaul. It's looking pretty exciting.
Yeah, I really like the model. I like the way the sword looks. I think he looks like he's ready to just charge in and cut a piece right off of you. Does he come with the Sons of Horus bolter?
Yeah.
He'll
have a Bane. At least in the Legacies, he has a Bane Strike and the Culling Blade. And at least looking at the model, it looks like it's modeled to be a unique looking Bane Strike bolter. So
yeah, I like that. I'm looking at the model now. He's got kind of like a leather sling holster on his hip for it that looks awesome. So yeah, I really like that.
Another neat model. I am a bit surprised that they put him on here, because I know they've already teased, they haven't really shown anything, but they teased that Axemand is getting a model. So I was surprised that Mar came out.
Yeah, that was kind of a shock.
Yeah, but it's also very informed with GW, so I'm sure the next 20 releases will be Sons of Horus and Imperial Fists. Although, that being said, they did break the mold with Tybalt Mar's rival in the story, the Shadrach Medusan.
Yep, I've got his page pulled up here. This is a pretty nice looking model. He was he's carrying a mastercrafted bolt gun, looks pretty cool. Reverse engineered from Banestrike technology, so I'm not sure exactly what that means. And he's got a power gladius. And he's got probably, if I was going to predict what this ability was, this is what I would have predicted. Once per battle, he can activate the special rule on his turn. And for the duration of this turn, all members in the same detachment, and also Iron Hands or Shattered Legions, gain the Furious Charge 1 and Hatred Traitor special rules. So with the right unit, that could really hit like a truck. And then as Warlord, he can make an additional reaction during the movement phase. What do you guys think? I like the model. It looked like Iron Hands.
Yeah, I think it's very Iron Hands. It's a little Spartan, like his sword isn't like super detailed or in your face. It looks like just a very, very standard, or I don't want to say standard, but a very robust and simple kind of design.
And is he missing an eye because of that scar, or has he just got it closed?
No, he's got it like closed, like he's looking down the scope on the bolt gun.
Yeah, I thought you're supposed to leave both eyes open when you're aiming, though.
Yeah, he never watched Pocahontas.
It depends on the site.
I will say,
are we making a joke?
I will say they're kind of keeping to form. He's got a very unique power pack. The little backpack's got like this little tech priest arm hanging off the back of it, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's really neat.
Does it have much reach, though? Like, maybe it folds out.
Yeah, it looks like it's folded up, and then it also looks like he's got a bunch of like power cables and conduits hanging off his back, too.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, neat model.
Brandon, anything to add?
No, I think he looks great. I would love a helmeted option, mostly just because I can't paint faces, and also because Iron Hands to me are they're wearing their helmet faction.
Well, Iron Hands players worldwide have been rejoicing because this is their first character model aside from their Primarch.
I'm still sitting here very bitter.
Yeah, absolutely. Nothing will change that, but... Yeah. Grant, if you're out there listening, I'm happy for you, buddy.
It is about time. As much as I'm, jokingly loving the Sons of Horus models, it is like just one of those things where everyone's kind of with their hands up going, where's our stuff?
Yeah, I mean, for the love of God, they don't like Iron Warriors, Iron Hands, Raven Guard. They don't even have like a Praetor model yet.
Yeah.
And I know we've complained about that before. It's crazy. But, yeah, it's been a long time. A long time coming, and I'm happy for them.
Well, let's see. What else did we have? We had
there was also the tank, right? The new Lehman Russ.
Yeah, all the Solar Ox stuff got dropped for pre-order. So we got the new Lehman Russ, the new, what was the other tank called? The Atheron. Oh, we got the Atheron Heavy Sentinel, the Dracosan Armored Transport, the Lehman Russ, plus all the infantry guys in the big battle box.
I think the Dracosan is awesome. Such a cool looking tank for me.
It's such a nice upgrade from the Chimera kits for 40K. Like, it's just a big chonky boy. It really does look like it could hold a full squad of infantry in it. The Solar Ox stuff, and I know we talked about this a bit, but the White Scars console the Sons of Horus Dark Emissary, the Apothecary Kit. I think we talked about those briefly. Those all went on pre-order. I think the only other thing specifically that could apply is 40K is getting a Custodes update. And with that, they're getting a new Shield Captain model that you can use in 30K. It's the only plastic Meltagun Guardian Spear on the market. So if for whatever reason you wanted one of those, this would be a quick and easy way to get one.
Yeah, that's good. Because basically the entire Custodes line is interchangeable between 40K and 30K, right?
The jet bikes and the Terminators are different. So it's just the like basic Sentinels and Wardens. You can use those and the Shield Captains.
Yeah, and the swords that make everyone lose their mind with Custodes, they are not in plastic.
The Meridian Blades don't exist. So you have to either 3D print or figure it out.
If you're in a mood for having a what the fuck moment, just go look up the profile on those things.
They are amazing. But that's also why you don't see them too often.
Well, right on. I think that wraps us up for the news update. Do we want to get on to the next thing? Right on. So I had an idea, and I kind of wanted to challenge you three fellas, of making a 500-point demo army. And imagine, if you will, that this demo army hangs out at the local friendly game store. And this is what veterans use to demo games for, you know, guys that are interested in the hobby. Realistically, you'd have two of these 500-point lists. They're identical. And you run your demo at the 500-point level. And you don't get, like, too heavy in, like, the Warlord traits or the Legion traits or anything like that. This is just kind of the bare-bones game, just working on the mechanics to get somebody interested in the setting. And then I wanted to kick that up to 1,000 points and see what you would add from beyond that base level. Now, it just 500 points, as we all kind of figured out, it's a little tricky to fit in. It's difficult to get a coherent Force Org list at 500 points, but you can do it. And I'll run through my list and tell you guys what I got, and then we'll just kind of go around the horn here and figure out what you guys did. I have a feeling it's going to be very similar. It's just going to come down to basically like, what two troop choices are you taking, and then what was your points fill beyond that? And I think mine is very simple. I just went with a champion centurion because one of the big selling points of this setting is the brutal melee combat. So I figure give him a guy with a big sword, which that champion comes with a paragon blade, I believe. So, you know, he's got his big kill stick. And then for my troop choices, I went one tactical squad, a 10-man tactical squad. The only upgrade on it is this urgent has a power fist. And then I went 10-man despoiler squad, and I actually kind of put some love into this squad because not only does the sergeant have a power fist, I also gave the squad two power axes. In addition to that, I went Contemptor Dreadnought with a plasma cannon and a heavy flamer. That way, I kind of wanted to hit kind of all the checkboxes on learning how like initiative works. So you're going to have your unwieldy weapons at initiative one, and then you're going to have the dreadnought with the two different template weapons with the blast template. So you'll know how blast works, and then you'll know how the flamer template works as well. I figure this is all super simple. They all have very basic profiles, and it's really easy to just kind of pit this against itself and kind of have what I would think would be a very balanced game while learning all the different kind of nuances of the core mechanics. What do you guys think? Brandon, do you want to go next?
Yeah, so I didn't love the staying within the Force Org. I had a completely different list, and I had to rewrite it really fast when I realized that that was what we were doing. I don't think Force Org is necessary for a demo game. Demo games are supposed to be fast and fun, and they're supposed to get people excited about trying the game.
It's a lot of scream wah to hit on two ups.
Yeah, I'm not going to that level, but I also tried to kind of center it around the Age of Darkness box, along with what would be a next logical step. So I went with just a regular Centurion. I didn't make him a champion, nothing like that. I gave him a power axe. I didn't want to mess around with consoles because you don't, when you're introducing someone to the game, there's no point in bogging them down in a bunch of extra rules. They can take their time to learn that stuff after they're excited about the game and want to learn it. I went with two tactical squads, pretty base, actually completely just bare bones. And then one of them has a Rhino transport because that's a pretty logical next purchase after the Age of Darkness box. And then a Contemptor Dreadnought with a Melticannon.
Okay, I think all that works. Maniple, do you want to go next?
Yeah, I wish I had a little more time to fine-tune this because I'm a little second-guessing some of my choices, but I wanted to try to get as many models in as I could with a lot of flexibility. So I just started with just a bare-bones Centurion, but I did give him Cataphracti armor because I really wanted this. You know, it's really crushing when you play a new game to have your warlord killed. You know, so to keep your leader alive as long as possible is important for a new player. So I thought I'd give him the Cataphracti. Then I did an assault squad. I second guess this because there isn't a commonly available assault squad kit, right? Is that coming out soon though? Do we have
it? It just came out.
It's available in stores now.
It is available in stores. Okay. So the assault squad. I had 5 points, so I gave a Volkite Serpenta to one of them for a little bit of punch. And then Breacher Squad, because Breachers are always good. Again, you've got some survivability there, so you're not just going to get wiped off and turn around. Those shields are going to help a new player a lot. Then this is the part that I have a problem with that I would try to go back and tweak. I just got a Heavy Support Squad, but all I could afford is the Heavy Bolters. So, but I think with that volume of fire, you're probably going to do some wounds on something. If I could, I would have given them the Volkites, but that would mean probably taking the Cataphracti armor off the Centurion. So what side of the coin would you guys flip there? Would you upgrade the heavy weapons or would you keep the heavy armor on your boss? Because he can get a lot of work done with that armor.
I'd probably upgrade the heavy weapons, especially for a newer player. That's a lot of damage output really fast, which can be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I can kind of see that.
Yeah, and I suppose with the he's already got a Artificer armor, so he's going to do pretty well even just in his basic kit.
Yeah, and the Iron Halo gives him a 4-up invul save, so his saves are going to be the same. And
Centurions don't have an Iron Halo.
They have. Oh, sorry, I'm thinking of the Praetor. Sorry, I'm thinking of the Praetor. Yep.
Yeah, but even so, at 500 points, a 5-up invul is fine.
Yeah.
All right, so I'll tweak that, and then I'll hear from Paul.
Yeah.
I'll see if I can come back to it.
What are you thinking?
Yeah, so I didn't really factor in, like, cost or starter boxes or anything of that nature. I kind of just went for a list that covers all bases. So you got a blank Centurion, you got a tactical squad and a Rhino. You got a Despoiler Squad, which will join the Centurion, and you have... This one was a bit of another flexible option, but I went with the Contemptor Dreadnought, but you could even substitute something like a Predator in there. The idea is you get a full mix of movement, shooting, and combat from everything on the table at a wide variety of weapon options and strengths. Because I didn't choose any upgrades, it puts you at about 470 for that. So you have 30 points to kind of throw in some power weapons or some Volkites or Penchas or something like that. So you can sort of play with what the person is willing to kind of step to introduce them to the rules. I also forgot to mention, I did mention the Rhino. Yeah. So you kind of get the like basic squad movement, you get walker movement, you get vehicle movement, you get embarkation and disembarkation rules, you get shooting, you get close combat, just a little bit of everything from the list at 500.
Yeah, I think that kind of covers all the bases for like your core rule set, basically. So yeah, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, the only problem with it is, again, kind of like Maniple was mentioning, despoilers are a thing. but also not a thing.
Assaults and breachers, because there's not a breacher kit yet.
Yeah.
So after that, then you would look at making this kind of an advanced demo if your new player wants to go again. So you bump it up to a 1,000-point list, just adding on to what you've already done, and then you add in your Legion traits and maybe a Warlord trait if you're feeling spicy. So I just added from that point on a 5-man Cataphracti squad for some, you know, big beefy boys, and then a Predator and some jet bikes. And then I think I gave the Predator Laz sponsons. And then I also upgraded the armor on the sergeants to Artificer armor for a better save. And I figured that would add a little more complexity and a little more flexibility to a more advanced game for a new player. Where did you guys take it from there, Brandon? What did you go with?
I didn't actually math out the list, but the next things I would add to mine, again, sticking with that Age of Darkness box, is some Terminators with the Spartan. That would give you 500 points pretty quick.
Okay. Maniple?
Yeah, I think I would... I don't have any armor at all yet in my list, so the first thing I would add would probably be a Dreadnought, probably a Rhino. Probably would even add a Praetor in there. And start to get a serious HQ choice, and then convert that Centurion to some sort of console. Then add in Apothecaries, because those always make the game more fun. And then your choice of a heavy support. So you do like another heavy transport, or just go out and just get the get a Kratos, or get one of the something with a big gun on it. Is a lot of fun. So that's where I would go with my next 500.
And Paul?
Yeah, this one I did kind of try to base off of the Age of Darkness box. 1,000 points ended up being Praetor, Cataphract, 5-man Cataphracti, Contemptor, 2 tac squads. And then after that, I think that's roughly like 650. So you could fit the Spartan in there, or you could even bump the tax squads up higher. But yeah, at 1,000 points or higher, it's just go Age of Darkness and start playing from there.
Are there any models that you would not use with a new player?
Named characters, Primarchs, and all the elite, like, named specialist units. Unless they brought them, I wouldn't use them against them.
Right.
If that makes sense.
It's like I wouldn't use Suzerain in a demo game.
Yeah. If they're fighting me, they're going to be Cataphracti. They're not going to be Justarin, because that's just a real easy way to get feel bads on their side of the table when my, you know, weapon skill 5, strength 5 guys come in and just wipe him. So we'll let him fight the weapon skill 4, toughness 4 if he's a brand new player. If he's a 40k player who's just come to Heresy, I might hit him with those just because he's used to that type of gameplay, and he'll be more ready and willing to take the challenge. But if it's a brand new player who's never played any GWIP before, he'll get the training wheels until he gets used to it.
No, obviously any new player that I faced when I play the Eschaton Imperative, like, congratulations, the entire board is difficult terrain.
And
interesting.
As we're talking, I also am kind of curious what you guys think about spam, you know, where you have one unit that's good and you just get as many of them as you can. On the one hand, it can be a little bit broken, especially if that's a really good unit. But on the other side, if they all do the same thing, you don't have to explain a lot of rules. I played in a tournament once when assault cannons in 40K were really good, and a guy just brought every unit he possibly could with assault cannons, which was, I think he did a Dreadwing, a Deathwing list. And it just had as many Terminators with assault cannons as possible, and he was just rolling the same thing for all of his attacks, which is a really easy way to play the game. I was kind of pissed off because he slaughtered me, but is spam appropriate in a beginner game just so you don't have a lot of stuff to keep track of?
I'm going to say no, because in a beginner game, you're not trying to just have not a lot of stuff to keep track of. You're trying to showcase this is what the system has to offer. So it's really about striking a balance of you can do all of these cool things, but also I'm not trying to overwhelm you in the first go. And also, people who play spam suck.
I don't know. Cultist Chris was a lot of fun.
Yeah, but that was a bad spam, and it was a meme.
Yeah, how many was
there's a difference between a meme and spam.
Yeah.
I think at one point he had 400 cultists.
I had the store kill record on cultists. In a 5-round game, I killed 187.
That was a lot of fun.
That's massive.
Oh, man, I miss 7th edition Iron Warriors.
So you guys, so in all of our lists, it looks like we all just kind of took as a wide variety of stuff as possible without getting too broken with anything and just adding in stuff that's, except for the Breachers, commonly available. When are we going to get that Breacher kit?
Oh boy, I don't know.
I've got plenty of Breachers.
Like, did we all take a unit of Breachers? Like I did. Who else?
No, you were the only one that did.
I was the only one. Okay.
Yeah, I did the spoilers.
Okay. Oh, the spoilers.
And
right.
Breachers can get expensive quick because they can take all the upgrades a tactical squad can take except for bayonets, and one in every five can take a special weapon. So they start out more expensive because they have the shields, and then you're putting like 10 or 15 points in for melta guns, you know, per five, for a melta gun per five guys. And then you're also gonna want to take a Vexilla and probably the Vox thing, and then put a, like, you can put a thunder hammer on a Breacher sergeant, so, which I usually do because he's put in work for me, so
I'm still waiting for that Ultramarines all Breacher list. I want it to happen.
I know. Maybe one of these days I'll build some Mark 3s to go with my 20 man Mark 6 kit, and then I'll have Praetorian Breachers and Scissorane to go with them, so it's just a big shield wall coming at you.
It sounds disgusting.
So what other little tips and tricks can we throw in here about setting up or running demo games? You know, if maybe we've got a listener out there that, you know, wants to run demos more often. What do you got? What do you got, man?
I think keep it to, you know, maximum of a 4x4 board and have a clear scenario. Like there's a, like kind of a King of the Mountain scenario is good, where you've got a central objective that they have to hold, and whoever holds it at the end wins. Something very simple. Or there are two objectives, one in my deployment zone, one in your deployment zone.
Right.
You got to try to capture each other's ones. So just a super simple scenario.
Yeah, so that was kind of going to be one of my other questions is, for the scenario, do you want to use a book scenario, or do you want to have a super simple one like Maniple suggested, of just like a single objective, nothing too crazy, just do like a 10 or 12 inch deployment zone on each side of the board. Don't do any like crazy diagonals or table quarters or anything like that. Just keep it as vanilla as possible in the beginning.
Yeah. Cause if you're doing something where you roll a random one, I think Warwick, you and I played one where as soon as we rolled the mission and set up, I knew I was going to lose because I didn't have the units required to fulfill whatever the objective was. And I just knew it was just going to, the only way I could win is if I wiped you off the board, and that was just not feasible either. So to have something that any kind of army could potentially win is the way to go.
Yeah, the only thing I would really offer as a tip or trick is just kind of feel out whoever it is you're doing the demo for. If you have the opportunity, kind of sit down with them and talk to them a bit, get to know them. Because then you'll be able to cater the demo experience to match their level of play. There have been a lot of people I've met who are experienced tabletop gamers who just never got into GW, and they've played, their experience was, I went to a place and they gave me the baby demo game and I didn't like it. And I walked away and said, well, that's actually not the real game that they're giving you. They're giving you the, like, the training wheels game, but here, why don't you come to my place and we'll do 1,000 points. And I'll give you like a more in-depth game with the rules, and they walk away going, oh, this was actually a lot of fun. This wasn't like the demo game. So it's something to keep in mind.
I think that's another reason I went with the plasma cannon on the dreadnought is because it can be a feast or famine weapon. The plasma weapons are feast or famine because sometimes your opponent is going to get his armor save. Other time it's going to annihilate whatever is in front of it. So I kind of wanted that kind of 50-50 chance of, you know, are we going to bounce off the army or are we going to melt whatever's in front of us? And I think that makes for more of a kind of dynamic demo of, you know, it's really putting in that kind of critical chance factor that is iconic in tabletop gaming. So it's going to look like a vanilla game. It's going to have some teeth to it if you're lucky. Okay, well, I think this was a fun discussion on just demo games and kind of like getting started or starter armies, kind of demo armies. Anything else you guys want to tack on the end before?
Just don't forget to explain how terrain works. You know, that's an important deal. And make the terrain look nice. I know if all you have is a coffee can and a cardboard box, I get it. But try to invest in a little nice terrain so the board looks cinematic and then the new player can take pictures. Then that can make a memory. So make it look nice.
Okay, so I think we want to get into a GW intern hour, and Brandon, you brought one up. What did you want to talk about tonight?
Yeah, so I wanted to talk about something that's been on my mind lately, because I've been, you know, thinking about doing some more screwing around with my Dark Angels. And one thing that I have always, and I know there are many people out there that disagree with me, but one thing that I've always found with my Dark Angels is they just don't fit well into any Rite of War. So, you know, a lot of the legions have Rites of War for a, you know, that fit into their playstyle very well. The Dark Angels have one where you can go all in on one wing. Of the Hexagrammaton, one of the six. The problem is you get all these troops that are unlocked, but they don't gain line. So I already need to bring my tacticals anyway, but now instead of bringing my tacticals as Stormwing, I'm bringing them as whatever wing I'm doing instead, which is just patently worse for them. So it feels like I'm just hurting myself by bringing a Rite of War. So I kind of wanted to get your thoughts, because when I look at the generic Rites of War as well, it's not really one there that speaks to me either. So I wanted to throw out there, what is a Rite of War that you guys would like to see in the game? And let's stick to generic Rites of War for now.
I agree with your assessment of them. I've looked through those Rites of War many times, and some of it is you have to really heavily invest in some very expensive model kits. And, you know, I've already got, when you buy the Age of Darkness box, you get a lot of troops, and it just seems like the troops just become a tax in those Rites of War, or you don't use them. So what I was thinking about, and I might feel a little bit dumb about this one, because I wanted to do something that represented the Shattered Legions, but I'm guessing in the book about the Shattered Legions, they're probably going to have something like this anyway. But I thought about doing something that limited your HQ and troop choices, HQ and elite choices, but benefited the troops you did take. So your limitation would be something like no Praetor models. So you have to run with a console, and then you're limited to just one elite choice. From there, you can take whatever you want, troops, fast, heavy, maybe a limitation on Gods of War, maybe do like one. And this would be like an understrength army or something that's been cobbled together from other legions. But the benefit would be that your infantry gets some kind of special rule. And when I looked at it and thought about the lore, I thought, well, why not just give all the infantry models fearless? Because they've seen some stuff and they're not going to be cowed by any traitors or anything else that might be coming after them. So limit the HQ and the elites, you know, bulk up on your other stuff. That lets you use all the troops, fast, heavy, anything you can cobble together, and then get a nice special rule for it. Does that sound like something you guys were thinking about?
Yeah, I like that entirely, except for you need a Praetor to run a Rite of War.
Okay, so yeah. Allow a Praetor, but no,
name troops. You can take a Delegatus as well, which is a console, but maybe even give maybe dock his weapon skill on the Praetor or something like that. Just say like he's walking wounded.
Warwick, what do you think?
Well, in like the Armored Spearhead Rite of War, you replace your Praetor with a Master of Armor, so you're taking a guy in a tank instead. I think what you're getting at, Maniple, is instead of having to take a specific model like a Praetor or a Delgatus or a Primarch, you would get an alternative model to run that Rite of War, like a Shattered Legions console that fills that same role and functions a little differently.
Yeah, like Regicide with a Delegatus, but do something that fills that role. Yeah, okay, I could work on that a little bit. Just so you get that, so that allows you to have a Rite of War. Yeah, that sounds good. So that was what I thought.
I dig it. Who wants to go next here?
So I've been thinking about this for a while, and especially after I got to working on the Destroyers, it would be really cool, and I kind of thinking about this, what if you are in the combat scenario of this enemy is so vile and hostile? I guess I'm thinking of this in like Great Crusade terms, but it would also apply to how the heresy is approached as well. You're dealing with an enemy that is so vile and toxic, and there's no reasoning with it. You can't face it in like kind of standard warfare. You go scorched earth on it. And instead of just bombarding the planet or going exterminatus, whatever, you send in the worst of the worst, you know, the ultimate bad boys of the Legion. You send in your Nemesis or your Mortalis destroyers and your assault destroyers, and you wipe everything off the map in the most brutal fashion you can think of. So what I would want to see is an alternative kind of Praetor model, like I mentioned, like with the Master of Armor or the Delgatus, but you would get some kind of Moritat level Praetor, and he's like your Lord Purifier or whatever. And when you take him, you have to take him and like two units worth of like the Destroyers, and they get line. And the catch to this army would be, instead of claiming objectives, they have the option to destroy objectives. And you're being as systematic as possible. You're wiping everything off the table. So not only does it give you a different kind of army to work with and give you a reason to take destroyers, which I think are cool, it also changes kind of how you play the game or how you win the game, really.
Would you also somehow find a way to incentivize, like, using artillery along with that list? Because I could see that.
Maybe have some stipulation, like you can only take vehicles that use blast templates.
Yeah, I think I'm the last one. To be honest, I didn't really write anything specific. What I did instead is I went through all the generic rites of war, kind of like Brandon and Maniple were saying, they just don't feel very good to play. And I wondered why that was, because in 1.0, the generics were really good. And I realized that in attempting to balance a lot of these, they nerfed a lot of them really hard. The drop pod assault one in particular, the 1.0 version was anything that could take a rhino could take a drop pod. Dreadnoughts could take drop pods. This was the big one. Terminators gained deep strike. And then they arrived on the first turn in a group kind of thing. The current one is rhinos can take drop pods. Dreadnoughts can take drop pods. Terminators don't get that. So you still have to take a drop pod if you want to take Terminators. But they don't fit into drop pods, so you can't unless you're taking the, what are they called? The Charybdis drop pods or any of that kind of stuff. So it's like all of a sudden you went from, okay, I can't take a lot of the options that I wanted to take because they just don't let you in this Rite of War anymore. And so that, and with a lot of the changes they made to how Deep Strike works in 2.0, it makes the Rite of War, I wouldn't say unplayable, but much less open than it was in 1.0. Of course, the thing with the 1.0 Orbital Strike Assault Rite of War, it was like absolutely crazy alpha strike kind of play where you're dropping 3,000 points on your opponent's deployment zone and wiping them off the table turn one. So, you know, there needs to be a bit of a middle ground there, but the 2.0 Rites of War just don't feel right. Like, they almost overcorrected with them.
Well, especially when you think about this, with that example specifically, that is, even if you gave the Terminators Deep Strike and all of that, augury scanners are 10 points.
Yeah.
So you already are going to have to deal with the fact that half of your opponent's army is going to nuke you on your Alpha Strike.
Yeah. So I noticed that with a lot of the generics, is they're missing whatever it was in 1.0 that made them absolutely cracked, but they also didn't gain anything to keep them competitive. I noticed Pride of the Legion's probably the closest to its 1.0 counterpart. And I mean, me and Brandon played, I think the first four games I was running Pride of the Legion, and it just never felt good. There was just something about the way the list restrictions worked where I never could quite get what I wanted on the table. So in terms of what I'd be looking for in a generic, I'd be looking for something that's a bit more open or gave us a few more options in terms of like list building. You know, like I said, like the Orbital Assault getting some sort of expansion, like Terminators getting Deep Strike back like they used to, or some other type of buff to them that would allow it to be a bit more playable, even with the current restrictions.
Yeah, I think, and I made my list like I did because that's what all the other Rites of War were, that where you have some kind of a restriction and then you get a benefit. But there's no reason they couldn't write the rules where you only get a benefit. Like, you take this Rite of War and all your tanks are 10 points cheaper. You take this Rite of War, all your troops are 10 points cheaper. And that's just it. You know, you get a free discount, or, you know, everybody gets an augury scanner, you know, whatever it might be. But, you know, to artificially put the limitations on there just makes it not fun. And that's my main complaint. I can't remember if I've ever run a Rite of War. I'm trying to work one in to use with my Alpha Legion. But even then, it's, you know, just spamming a bunch of headhunters, and that's not super fun either.
Yeah, I mean, I know I've talked about it with the Black Reaving, but I have to take more fast attack than heavy support. So I'm locked to 2 heavy support, and in order to do that, I have to take 3 fast attack, which the fast attack options are, well, we've had that discussion, they're okay at best. So, you know, it just, sometimes the tax to run them just really feels harsh. And it keeps you from really running stuff that you would want to run otherwise. It's why I haven't invested in tanks at all, because I got to put jet bikes in my lists.
Awesome. Well, again, in the idea of just kind of leaning more into basic troops, I had 2 different thoughts here that I'd like to share with you guys. So first one being, I'd like to have like a ground assault type a list. And what I mean by that is I want something that really leans into the spoilers. So lock it into, you can only take the spoilers as your compulsory troops. But those 2 compulsory troop squads, when they charge, they get furious charge, or maybe they get +1 weapon skill on the charge, something like that. Just something that makes me want to take this troop that I already need. They already have line, so I'm not trying to make something that isn't a troop a troop. I'm just trying to make a troop a little better, and also lean into it more. Now, the other one I thought about, and this is entirely because I've been, you know, looking at my Iron Warriors stuff now, and I would love to see a, like, breaching artillery firestorm type list. And essentially the idea here would be that you could, your anything with the ordnance keyword, so your artillery, any of your Legion artillery pieces essentially could improve their breaching by +1 to a maximum of 4+. So that would actually make like Basilisks and Medusas fairly viable. The big complaint on those being that they're AP4, which means that Marines just laugh them off. So getting that little bit of a better breaching on those might actually get you to see them on the table. And it also controls the problem of people would just spam the Whirlwind Scorpius and get a 3-up breaching, which would be stupid.
Yeah. You could even put some sort of restriction, like they have to take that Siege Master console that we talked about a while ago.
That's exactly what I thought about as
well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Going back to your troop one that kind of came to mind, I remember people talking about it a while back, was a rite of war that lets Inducti be taken as compulsory choices. So that way you get your unique Legion trait troops with the little buff. But then it would have something else, like you couldn't take a named character or something like that. But yeah, it would just allow you that flexibility to take some cool troops that would be more flavorful for your army.
Yeah, I feel like I saw something about that on a channel on YouTube recently about like having a Master of Inducti console,
yeah,
which could let you bring Inducti as compulsory.
I think I saw that video too. It was basically they lifted 1.0 Garland Serlac from the World Eaters, because that's his old rule. Was his warlord trait was you could take troops and say they're Inducti now, here's their bonuses for an extra couple points.
That's kind of my hang up with Inducti, is that they're cool and all, like especially the ones I get for Night Lords and Ultramarines. I don't really have a reason to take them.
Yeah.
Like they're not, they actually get more expensive because they can take, the bonus to taking them is that they can take special weapons.
Yeah.
So they get more expensive than just taking a tactical squad.
So they're almost like slightly cheaper, slightly worse veterans that really rack up the points on upgrades. Yeah, with mine, it's like they're really good, but I'm already having to take two slots of troops, and that just gets in the way of Justeran after that.
Yeah, and mine are really good for Dark Angels, but it's entirely because they're just a support squad for cheaper. And then the funny thing about that, though, is as well, you actually can't take any of the Dark Angels Rite of War and Inducti. Because Inducti can't take a Hexagrammaton wing, and they all require you to take your troops as a certain wing.
Inducti have line, don't they?
They do.
Right, so they have line. They don't have compulsory troops. That's, yeah.
Yeah, they're not compulsory.
Yeah, because they're a support squad.
So that's why, I never take them for Ultramarines, because when I'm taking my Logos Locatora, I have to have three compulsory troops already, so I don't need to take another line unit realistically.
Yeah, and the Ultramarines ones are, they're not bad, but they don't fill any role thing that you're missing.
Yeah, exactly. It's a 10-man tactical squad with two plasma guns in it, when I could take a 10-man breacher squad for, yeah, arguably more points. But with that, they're going to have two melted guns, and I could put an apothecary with them. And if I'm really feeling froggy, a character unit can join them. So I don't have they're cool Inducti. I have no reason to take them. And I'm not even sure, as funny as the Night Lords ones are, I'm not sure that I'd ever run them. Yeah, because
you run those just for the memes.
Yeah,
stabby memes.
I should look at it, but it's so hard for me to build a list with the Night Lord stuff without taking a bunch of cool Night Lord shit. And it's like their other stuff is so cool.
But why not just have a bunch of dudes running around with shivs?
Aren't they like strength 3 shivs or something? And I'll have to look at them again. They're funny.
Doesn't matter. They're shivs.
It's the funny thing about them is that like they can shiv the sergeant instead of the enemy.
Yeah, it's either like on a 1 or a 6 at the beginning of the duel.
Yeah. All right. Well, again, the other thing I was going to say about your destroyer rite of war is that I've seen that there are fan rules specifically for destroyer rite of war. And I think it's in like Panoptica, which I've never looked at.
Yeah.
Might be worth a look. It's definitely destroyers kind of are in a weird place of like,
yeah,
these don't fit anywhere.
They are in a weird spot. They don't really fit anywhere, and you don't have a reason to take them, because by the time you sink enough points into the destroyer squad to make it awesome, you could have taken another dreadnought. Although the Ultramarines Nemesis destroyers are super nasty. They're really expensive, but they're awesome. So I'll probably build, and you can run them in a 20-man block, so I'll probably build a 20-man squad of those, and I'll have fun with that, but we'll see how it goes.
We've all brought up the issue of upgrades making units less points efficient. And 40K got around this in the last edition by doing power level, where you just take a unit and it's just 10 points, no matter what you give to it. If something like that happened to Horus Heresy, would that ruin the game for you guys?
Absolutely.
It wouldn't ruin the game for me. I'd just never play it with that.
Yeah, I have looked at the 40K list building, and it drives me up the wall. I do not care for it one bit. I think it needs to be more granular. You need to be very selective about what you take.
And let me put it this way to you, Manipul, a way someone put it to me when they were making the argument against power levels, and I think it was quite effective. I think in like 8th edition 40K, when they came out with power levels, a 10-man Vanguard veteran squad with jump packs was like 9 power. Now, a Vanguard veteran squad came with chain swords base. And there is a very big difference for 10 Vanguard veterans with chain swords versus 10 Vanguard veterans with thunder hammers.
I was just about to say, if I could pay the same points for my 10-man Laz Cannon squad that I could for 10 Heavy Bolters, I'd take the Laz Cannons every time. But yeah, the power level, it's great for the, just throw stuff on the table and go kind of play, but it's just not granular enough for what I'm looking for. And Heresy's already got issues with balancing to begin with.
The other thing I thought of, and I think I mentioned this in an episode a while back when 10th edition came out, is that I was looking at building a Leagues of O'Tan list because I got the starter box when it came out. And when you take the base troop squad, I can't remember what they're called, the Huskulls or whatever, you have an option to take three different pieces of war gear. So one member in the squad, three members in the squad can each take a different piece of war gear. There's no reason not to take them, and they don't cost you any points. Why would you ever not take this war gear? It's free. You have the option for it. So I think power level ruins that kind of nuance to the game. So that's why it's a no-go for me.
So within the 30K problem, then, do you make those upgrades, should they be less points so they're more points efficient? Because you're already paying the tax by having the unit itself. Should the upgrades be cheaper?
The Vexilla and the Augury Scanner and the Vox thing are 10 points apiece. And, Brandon, you always take them, right?
I always bring a Nuncio Vox, and I always bring a
Vexilla.
Vexilla. I don't always bring the Augury Scanner because everybody is so afraid of it at this point that nobody deep strikes anyway.
Right.
So the only thing I ever bring it on is a heavy weapon squad, and that's because it allows them to see out past night fighting limits. Manipul, I think what can actually be done in Heresy to improve this is what we're talking about now, is rights of war. If there's a unit that we're like, this thing, it's cool, but it just doesn't, it's not where it needs to be to really see the tabletop. Make a Red of War for it. Like we talked about with the Inducti.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. So if you have this Rite of War, then every unit gets a, open the armories. Every unit gets a free upgrade, or something along those lines, where all of a sudden you've got a discount on the stuff you want to take anyway.
Mm-hmm. The other thing I will say about Heresy is that it's not balanced, and that's totally fine.
Well, right. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I think we're both saying the same thing. Yeah. Should we move on to the Vox?
Let's get to the Vox mail. We've got a couple of emails to read this go around. Brandon, you want to read the first one?
Yeah, absolutely. So we got an email from our friend Wilfred Wilkinson. And it says, finally getting back to you after the Warhammer World trip. Thanks for the shout out on Legion Cast, and thanks for the advice. We are happy to provide it. We had a fantastic time. My wife really enjoyed the food at Bugman's and a good amount of the artwork, even though she has pretty much zero interest in Warhammer. Dude, the artwork is on point. My wife was into it too. The exhibits were quite a trip down memory lane for me and a lot of fun to look through. With a toddler in tow, we didn't quite have time to find the assassin in the multi-floor exhibit. I did not have a toddler in tow, but I just couldn't be there all day. So... no worries there. While they didn't have a Jagatai in stock, I did manage to get him and a couple of other gifts shipped to me. That's the nice thing about Warhammer World that they don't actually tell you is, unlike every other GW store, they will just ship straight to you. Unfortunately, I also dealt with everyone's favorite holiday villain, the Postal Service. Dude, where is my Moomak, man? I'm still hurting about that. Everybody who works for the post office is not terrible, but the post office itself is. All right. As not only did USPS yeet my Jagatai after messing up the address, which GW thankfully replaced and shipped out within a week. That sucks. But I will say, the GW customer service team is usually pretty good. But also, it turns out, it's an international problem. The Spanish Postal Service, since I currently work overseas, held my golden keshag prisoner while I filled out customs forms and paid some hefty import fees over the course of a few weeks. Fun times.
That is highway robbery. That is bullshit.
Luckily, Jagatai has made it to my hobby desk and is currently in progress, along with the White Scars Cataphracti Praetor and a Moritat. I'm using the Astartes battle group to create, along with bits that I have lying around. Sent y'all a couple of pictures of the progress so far. Anyways, I'm getting closer to catching up with you guys. I have about 3 books behind, just finished reading No No Fear while listening to Deliverance Lost, and debating whether I should just skip the Primarchs. Let me just stop you right there. Do it. My goal is to
Just listen to our discussion of it. That's enough. Yeah. You'll learn all you need to know about it from our episode. You can hear the rage and then move on.
Just the frustration that we all had.
My goal is to be caught up with you guys before you get to Scars. Apologies on the length and thanks for reading this far. I figured I'd leave a question to you guys if you'd like to debate this on your hobby talks. Which Legion-specific models do you think GW has done well, can be looks or rules or both? And which do you think they could have done more with? Can send you my answers for White Scars if you're curious. Anywho, I hope y'all are surviving the winter and look forward to the next pod. Cheers, Will. Your White Scars are looking good so far, buddy. And
that sounds like a good topic for a future Pyreside chat, so I'd be up for that.
Yeah, I would love to get into that on this episode, but I think you just picked a topic for our next hobby roundtable for us, because I can sit here and you're asking me to complain.
Yeah.
Which I can do.
At least you and I are pretty good at that.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you again for the email, Will. We will, like I said, we will definitely add that to the list of things to discuss in the next hobby roundtable. So look out for that.
Yeah, I'm glad you had fun at Warhammer World and glad you got to make that trip. Congratulations.
Yeah, I know none of you guys have been to Warhammer World, but it's definitely, if you ever get the opportunity, I cannot recommend it enough. It's really freaking cool.
Yeah, the Citadel is the closest I've been able to swing, and it's a far cry from Warhammer World, unfortunately.
You know, I had just gone to Warhammer World when they announced the Citadel, and they were like, it's the Warhammer World of North America, and I was like, that's some big shoes to fill. And I walked in there and I was like, this is not Warhammer World.
It's pretty disappointing.
Yeah, there was a huge push for that Citadel when it opened up, and we went there when we were down there, didn't we?
Yeah, we played there. We played Titanic.
That was the place we played at. Yeah, that was not a Warhammer World. That was not even a really nice game shop. And I've been to some really nice game shops, and that I was not impressed.
It's basically a plus-sized Games Workshop with a cafe.
The cafe is good, though.
But the cafe, when I was there, was closed.
The water was shut off.
Yeah, the water issue and all the COVID stuff. Well, I will say now it's a lot better.
They do make good drinks.
Yeah.
And then the other thing there is that, shout out to the staff of the Citadel. They are very friendly. They love helping people, and they are super fun to talk to, and they all love to be there. So I dog on Games Workshop constantly. I am not referring to you guys.
Well, right on. Do we want to get into our next email?
Yes.
Okay, we got an email from a new fan that I'm happy to read. So this is titled Damn Nation of Pythos. This is from Ryan Muza. I hope I said that right. He says, hello, chaps. Hope you're doing well. Just riding from dear old Belgium to send over some positive vibes. We don't do positivity here. I discovered your podcast a while back and really enjoy listening to your thoughts on the various Heresy novels. I also love hearing your hobby progress and hobby roundtable episodes. I particularly enjoyed your Secret Santa initiative. That is super fun, and I love doing that every year. I can't remember which episode it was, but I remember that Damnation of Pythos came up, and which immediately elicited small bout of rage and consternation from you all, and it got me thinking about the novel in general. If you ever decide to make an episode on it, I volunteer myself as tribute to help counterbalance the inevitable salt such an endeavor should induce. I definitely have some thoughts on the subject. I'm glad you guys are producing content and will keep consuming until such a time as my brother kicks me off the Spotify Premium. Can't be bothered with ads. Take care and cheerio, Ryan. Well, Ryan, stay in your brother's good graces as long as possible because we don't want to lose you. As far as Damnation as Pythos goes, I think we're going to have a full panel on that one. We'll see. And I'm sure it's going to be fun. What do you guys think?
Well, I'll say Belgium is close to my heart. There's a Trappist monastery just to the north of where I'm currently assigned. And the monks there still talk about an old Belgian monk that used to live there who brewed his own beer because the beer here in the States was not up to his standards. And so he would brew his own beer in his monastery cell. And then every night he would, you know, open one up and drink it. And then the other monks were always very jealous. And so when I moved to DC, I lived out there for 3 years working on a degree. One of my favorite places was a little Belgian place that did mussels and wine sauce and Belgian beer.
You took me there when I visited, and that was one of the best meals I've ever had.
Yeah, with some frites and duck fat. Oh my gosh, that stuff was amazing. So cheers. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, I'm sure that whenever we get to Damnation of Pythos, it's going to be a hotly contested panel. I will say, if Spotify's playing ads in during our podcast, like in the middle of it, they sure aren't sharing that money with us.
Yeah, funny how that works.
Yeah, screw ads, and now a word from our sponsor.
Now a word from our sponsor. Please sponsor us.
Yeah, that's not a book I've read, so I'll be looking forward to that, because anything that induces that much rage must be good, right?
It's Iron Hand. Mostly Iron Hands, and then there's some Shattered. Well, I guess some Salamanders and Raven Guard in there too. Paul Maniple, thanks for joining us. I'm always glad to have you on for a hobby roundtable.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks.
Always good. Another one in the can.
Definitely. Why don't you guys go ahead and check us out on social media? We are LegionCast, a Horus Heresy podcast on Twitter. And shoot us an email at legioncast18@gmail.com. We love hearing from you guys. Don't forget to like and share this podcast, give us a rating, and definitely send it to your hobby buddies.
Yep. Thanks for stopping by, everybody. And remember to march in fortune.